Hey, this is Steve Balton. You are tuned into My Turning Point, where this week I'm joined by Allison Chains, guitarist, singer, songwriter, all-around amazing musician, Jerry Cantrell, to talk about his new solo album, Brighton. Really enjoyed talking with Jerry about the album, his first solo album in more than 18 years, his fandom of Elton John and friendship with Elton John, so much more. So I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as we did.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, man. I gotta be careful now. It's being recorded.
Well, you know, every interview we've ever done is recorded, dude. I want to get it right, but how you been, dude?
I'm good.
Man, you know, it's funny. This album takes me back to, you know, that first interview we did on Boggy Depot. And it's really funny because you know how you go through, and I think you and I have talked about this over the years as well. You go through cycles where you just rediscover songs all the time. And,
sure.
You know, songs you've known for years and years. And I really went through it. And during COVID, for some reason, Boggy Depot was an album I went back to quite a bit. The song Between, especially,
was one
that I absolutely love. And, you know, it's interesting. We're going to start sort of tying that one into this one. I remember when we did that interview, we talked about the song Hurt a Long Time. And I asked you if that one was a tough one to sing. And you told me the story behind it and said, man, you got a good ear. Well, Goodbye on this record feels a little bit the same way. It's a great song. I mean, it's interesting. Is that one that I've talked with a lot of artists in this last year about vulnerability. And was that a song that for you almost surprised you in a way when it came out?
Well, it's not my song. First off, it's an Elton John and Bernie Taupin song. And
it's the last song
on Madman Across the Water, which is one of my favorite records. And it's a song that I've always, it's always resonated with me. You know, that there's a song called Curtains as well. That's kind of similar, very short, and it ends a record, of Elton's. And, it's just power packed with a ton of emotion in like a minute and 40 seconds, you know, it's beautiful. It's somber. It's very powerful. And obviously it's the, you know, it says goodbye. So, when I did those LA shows, I thought it would be a good closer. So we covered that tune and had a great time doing it. And when we kind of got deep in the process of, kind of looking toward the end of this record, like I had about 8 good songs that fit together and felt like a record. And I'm like, I think we need one more, man. And, you know, Tyler, suggested, why don't we record Goodbye? And so we did. And, Vincent Jones did an amazing, string arrangement and key pass of that song. And I sang it, sent it to Elton and you know, he dug it and, said we should, absolutely should use it on the record. So, you know, that I figured it should reside in the same place that it did on his record, you know, at the end. But, yeah, it's been one of my favorites for a long time, that song.
Well, that's interesting though, too, because, you know, and it's funny because I consider myself fairly knowledgeable about Elton. I even impressed Brandi Carlile once digging out the song Friends, which to me is not right. But no, I did not know that one at all. So I'm going to go back and listen to the original. But it's interesting because I talk about this with artists all the time, right? When you cover a song, you can know a song your whole life, but when you sing it, you discover new nuances in it, things you hadn't noticed. So as, you know, singing one of your songs that was one of your favorites for all this time, were there things you noticed in the song that you appreciated in a different way now?
You know, it's always an interesting proposition, you know, when you're covering things. It's a rich tradition of people, you know, continuing and reinvigorating and celebrating songs that mean something to them and doing their version of it. So, I feel like I did as good a job as I can do. And, but it's interesting, like, you know, you'll find, I've done a few covers in my day, and like one in particular that I've done a few times is, Wish You Were Here, by Pink Floyd. And, I remember, it's odd. You talk about, does it mean something different, you know, when you're singing it and, or when you record it. And, you know, I can relate to that. I can give you an example. Wayne Kramer from MC5 has a charity that he does where he goes in and he performs for prisoners and stuff. And he also donates guitars to them. And he invited myself and a bunch of people to go to Sing Sing. And I played Wish You Were Here to the room of prisoners, you know, I didn't think about it until I was actually in the performance and singing the line, "Did you trade a walk on part on the wall for a lead role in a cage?" And I'm like singing that to fucking a room full of guys who are going to be there for their whole life. That was a pretty interesting twist on actually feeling a line that you maybe didn't think about before and the particular circumstance in which you're performing it, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, obvious question. What was the response?
They were very moved by the fact that that they got a show. You know, they don't get a whole lot of stuff like that. You know.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I want to go back for a second, and you know, you and I have talked so many times over the years. I never like to start with the obvious, but you mentioned the LA shows, so I know that was kind of a turning point moment where you decided to make this record. I mean, what was the moment that you decided to take this from doing the solo shows and enjoying that experience to going back and deciding that, okay, it was time to make another solo album? Because what, it's been 19 years since the last one?
Yeah, well, I've been working with my other like side project during that time, a little band called Alice in Chains, you know. Still trying to get that off the ground. I think we're almost there, you know. But
give it a few more years. Maybe five more years.
Maybe we'll get there. Yeah, I mean, the shows weren't the inspiration for an album. It was an extension of the idea I was already committed to, you know. And I think the feeling was, you know, it was going to be a while we were going through the process of making the record, that I thought it would be fun to just do a couple of shows and kind of have fun, you know. Kind of let people kind of reconnect with the music that I'd done before and kind of give people a little hint of what was to come, you know? So, yeah.
So then what was the moment that you decided? Because like you say, you've been a little busy with that other project that, you know, one of these days you'll get off the ground. So what was the moment then that you decided it was time to do a new solo album?
I don't think there was like a eureka light bulb moment. I just started feeling like I wanted to do one, you know, and I've been thinking about it for the last couple of years. And I had the time and the opportunity because we were wrapping up the tour for Rain Air Fog. And generally, you know, when you do an album campaign, it's generally about a 3-year commitment, you know, from writing, recording, putting the record out, touring it from beginning to end. And so, you know, as we've gotten older over the last, you know, 3 records or so, you know, we generally take a year off or something like that, you know, because we've been going pretty hard and we've been living with each other for 3 years. So it's time, you know, sometimes it's good to get away, unplug and dive back into your own lives. Anyway, we were going to have the time, we were going to take a year off and that's when I started working on the record. And then, of course, the world had other plans and shut down. So that was really interesting. We were in the studio in March and, you know, we were keeping an eye. I was keeping an eye on what was going on and it didn't look good. And, you know, things were pretty bad overseas. And I was pretty sure, you know, and what's going on there is gonna get here eventually and vice versa. So, so we were kind of planning for the inevitable and we were luckily able to get all of the basic tracks recorded before we actually really shut down in mid-March, you know. So at that point, you know, I had a ton of singing to do, I have a ton of guitar playing to do, and we just kind of rolled with it and kind of followed the guidance, you know. We didn't really get in big groups. We kind of worked one-on-one, or I sent tracks to guys and they'd do their versions at home and send them back. It was unique circumstances for sure. Never made a record like that. But, I think it's a really interesting record because of that. It added some depth. It took more time because of that. I intended to put this record out last September, but with the state of the pandemic and the situation that we're all trying to learn to live with, I would say that it actually became a richer record because I came up with a few other ideas. A few players came in really late, like Abe Laboriel Jr. and Vincent Jones, and Duff. Duff came in toward the end too. So those three things probably wouldn't have happened, had I done the record earlier. So, and it made the record so much better, that all of those guys and the other musicians, as well, put their little touch and their energy into this record.
I mean, look, man, it's so interesting. I've talked to hundreds, if not thousands, of artists during this time, and everybody has a different story about how COVID has affected their artistic process. And it's funny, though, because yours is very similar to John Bon Jovi, who was telling me as well. Look, normally you put out a record, you do a tour, so you're on a deadline. And he felt like the best two songs on the last record were songs that were written because they couldn't go on tour. So it's interesting for you. I mean, yeah, because basically it's like normally we'd have a deadline and then he was able to write more timely songs. And dude, it was fascinating. I mean, I talked with everybody from, like David Guetta, who's like, I did my first summer vacation with my kids in 12 years, to Lucas Nelson, who was telling me how he and Willie and mom had dinner every night at 5:30, which they hadn't done. And, 40 years, because when is Willie not on the road? I mean, everybody had such a major life of people. It's interesting. The only artist who said this to me, Shaky Graves out of Texas?
What's that?
Oh, Shaky Graves. It's an artist named Shaky Graves.
Oh, no, I don't know who that is. Yeah.
Really, really, really cool artist. And I mentioned it. He's the only artist who said to me that for the first 6 months, he's like, I didn't do a damn thing. He's like, because I'm a touring musician, when will I ever have another year off in my life? And he was the only artist who said that. I found that fascinating because everybody else was, went through it in different ways. So it's interesting for you, talk about the things that you were able to use in this process that you feel like you want to be able to use going forward as an artist and a writer, because I think everybody re-examined things because all of a sudden you have more time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, life is always in session, man. And change is the constant. You know what I mean? So, it's a big one. It's one of the bigger ones I remember in my life, you know what I mean? And I think we all had to roll and adapt with it, but that kind of is life, So, you make the best of it. And, I was glad to have a record to work on. I wasn't actually planning on touring that year. Neither were Alice. So we were a little bit lucky in that regard, just coincidentally, and it gave me time to work on this record. So, it does put you through some thought processes though, for sure. I know a lot of our crew and club owners and smaller folks that you don't think about too much, like, man, it fucking devastated them. You know what I mean? And I'm lucky enough to have been able to write it out and weather it and not work for a couple of years and still be able to eat and pay rent. You know what I mean? It's been hard on a lot of people, and I'm hoping that we can kind of get this figured out here, because it's in the landscape and it's something we're gonna have to live with here. So, hopefully enough of us get vaccinated and learn how to live a little bit of a different way to deal.
Well, it's fascinating though as well. I mean, go ahead.
It ain't going away.
No. But see, and again, it's funny because I want to come back to the record in a second because it's such a wonderful record. And it's interesting as well. Yeah. But, but very quickly, are there one or two? It's like I spoke with Jeff Ament maybe a month ago, right? And he was telling me that, Pearl Jam was just going into rehearsals for Ohana. But he's like, I want a tour different. He's like, we've started to discuss it. We want a tour different. And it's funny because I mentioned Brandi Carlile earlier, right? I know you know her well. And she was telling me, it's funny, we're joking. And she was like, well, what I, and you mentioned the small clubs. And we were joking about, the idea of doing She's like, basically, no one gives a shit about the Staples Center or places like that or Target Center, you know, these big arenas. She's like, we care about Cat's Cradle, 930 Club, these places that have the history. And I'm like, yeah, but as an artist, yeah, you can't go and play a month at the Troubadour. She's like, well, maybe I will. You know, so it's interesting. Are there one or two things that you really are thinking differently from going forward, whether it's for your solo stuff, whether it's for Alice?
Yeah, well, you know, we've always been... We've always been a varied band, and we've performed everywhere from the smallest clubs to the biggest fucking venues. So, and everything in between. And there are interesting qualities about all of them. You know what I mean? And I love playing small places. It's fun. You know, as long as the sound system's good, and people can hear. And you got enough room where you can stand on a stage without fucking breaking each other's headstocks off, you know, standing fucking while you're rocking out. That's pretty much my only limitation. But yeah, I mean, you know, I think, how cool is it, you know, just as a fan, I've been in some small clubs and seen some really big artists that don't play small clubs. You know what I mean? And it's pretty fucking badass. It's so intimate, you know, and it's very exclusive, you know, because there's only so many bodies you can fit in there. So it's a cool moment, you know. You know, and the live shows are the thing, you know. It's we write our music, we record our music, we throw it out there, but that's a beautiful thing, and it's very meaningful, and it's part of the process that I love and enjoy. But the goal is getting to be able to stand on a stage in front of people and play those songs and all your other songs for people and have that live experience. So, we're one of the jobs that, you know, requires getting a lot of people together. So there's a lot of things to consider, you know, like, you know, trying to make sure people are safe in this new environment, and trying to keep healthy, you know, because you can't cancel, you know what I mean? Like, you don't want to be in a situation where you're going out, you know, and in a week you got to shut down for a couple of weeks and then you got to reschedule all that stuff, availabilities. And it's a lot to think about, a lot of things to consider, you know? So.
All right. Quick question. One word answer, two word answer. What's the best small show you've ever seen for a big artist?
The best small show?
Yeah. Like the best club show you've ever seen for a big artist, like you were just talking about.
Best show. I mean, you know, there's I saw Prince once in a small club, here in LA, actually. Forget the name of it. It's like a place, like an after, kind of an after hours jam spot.
Was it Sayers Club? Because I saw him there.
He took over the fucking stage and fucking just jammed for fucking forever. It was awesome, you know. That's one.
Yeah. All right, let's bring this back to the album. It's interesting because, you know, as we're talking about taking this to the stage, are there songs in particular that you are really excited to play live? And, you know, it's funny, I started with Goodbye, which I didn't even recognize as an Elton song. And, you know, maybe you're going to tell me this is a fucking Heart song or something, but the other one that absolutely jumped out at me, I love them all, but Black Hearts and Evil Done was just one that was like, there's something about that little twang feel. And maybe it's because it reminds me so much of Boggy Depot, some of the songs on there. But that was one that I absolutely loved.
Yeah, that's a cool tune, man. It's kind of draws on influences of, you know, just kind of a country music Americana storytellers, you know, a little bit of a folk thing to it too. Then and that's kind of a tradition, you know, harkens back to eras of like the, you know, 60s and 70s songwriters, you know. Yeah, I really dig that song a lot too. I think we could play the whole record, you know, time permitting. But luckily, I've got a few more records and a handful of other songs that probably people might want to hear too. So, we'll see. I will certainly play a big chunk of this record. And, you know, I'll touch on Degradation Trip and, Boggy Depot. And I will play songs from my career as a songwriter and Alice as well. And I might even throw in a few more covers.
All right. Well, wait, what's one song you've always wanted to cover that you haven't done yet?
One song I've always wanted to cover. Well, I don't do them too often. You know, I spent a lot of time playing my own tunes, so I don't know. There's a few kicking around. When I record it, you will know. How about that?
All right. Well, I didn't know goodbye. So, but yeah. Now it's interesting though too. It's funny because I mentioned Black Hearts and Evil Done, and like you said, yeah, well, all right. When you mentioned the 60s, 70s songwriters, it's funny for the first name that came to mind for some reason is Kris Kristofferson. So, are there artists that you hear in that? Influences.
Yeah, I love Chris. Chris is an amazing writer, you know, and just kind of a interesting dude, you know. You know, Townes Van Zandt, you know, Bob Dylan, you know, the Willie Nelson. There's so many great writers, you know, that are kind of more kind of pared down, you know, and to the bare elements and Those are all people that I admire as well, you know, as songwriters and what they've done in their careers and
all amazing writers and it's funny because you say Chris is an interesting dude. That's kind of the understatement of all time, man. He may be the most interesting person in music.
For sure, man.
All right. Well, it's interesting because I mentioned that one though specifically, but obviously you look at songs like Atone and Brighton, and I know you just released a video for Brighton. Those are songs that just feel natural to the stage. Like, I mean, they're big, they're fast, they're songs that people are really going to gravitate to. So are there other ones? You mentioned wanting to play the whole album, but are there ones in particular that you feel like, okay, because you've been in the set, like you say, you played every size venue, you know that when you get there, the song is going to change, the audience is going to have energy for it, and you're particularly excited to see how the audience sort of makes it their own.
I think Brighton is going to be great live. You know, I think that is going to be really fun. Just doing my reps. You know, the lineup of that band never played together as a band while we were recording it. It was all kind of in pieces, you know. Abe did his drums in New York, you know, and we were working, Tyler and Fig and I were working out of LA, and Vincent Jones came in later, so he did his tracks on his own. So while we were doing the video, which just came out last night, you know, you're doing your reps to do your faux rock, to do your faux rock move, so you're playing the right chord while they're filming you. And, you know, I just stood in front of the speakers and ran sets, you know, kind of just playing it a cappella and singing it back to the track. And I could totally envision how powerful that's going to be live. That's going to be an amazing, amazing thing. And then the funnier part was everybody, you know, that performed on it, with the exception of Duff, of course, and Tyler gratefully, thankfully filled in on bass, is that while we were standing there doing it, I said, hey, man, it's great to get the band back together for the first time, because everybody was meeting everybody. Hey, how you doing? What's up? You know, nobody, you know, there was a few guys that had never met each other before, you know, and we had not played together as a group, just as individuals or in pairs of twos. So it was pretty cool. But yeah, I think Brighton's going to be amazing live. I think Atone's going to be amazing live. You know, Siren is a really cool, touchy, rich vibe. I could see a lot of visuals, you know, that we could use, you know, if we're using that sort of staging. Had to Know is a great rock song, you know, and, you know, I think the whole record, like I say, would translate to live. They're very simple. They're very direct, to the point. It's, no frills, no fat songwriting, you know. It's super trim, super lean, and they're all very powerful and have their own vibes. So, looking forward to taking it to a stage in March in the States. We're going to do a States run for about 2-3 months, and then hopefully, COVID willing, we'll jump the pond and take it over to Europe, and then we'll see where we go from there.
Nice. Well, I know we got to wrap up in a second, but I got to ask you as a fan, because I mentioned Boggy Depot. What are some of the older songs for you? And it's interesting, right? Because you go back and, like you say, part of the appeal of this was revisiting songs from Boggy Depot and Degradation. So what are the ones for you that you are particularly excited to revisit or that you just miss doing?
You know, I played a great deal of them, you know, on those shows, you know. You know, there's probably four or five off of Boggy and four or five off of Degradation Trip that I would like to work in, you know. It's going to be fun, you know. We'll see what we come up with. I'll tell you this. I'll draw from my whole career, and obviously we'll be, you know, promoting this record and promoting the other two solo records that I did. And I hate that word, solo record, my other records on, that I did. And my career with Alice as well, I'm sure.
Yeah. But I guess I was asking if there are particular songs that, you know, cause look, songs change over time. This is what we're talking about in regards to Goodbye.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we'll figure it out, dude. You know, I mean, I don't know. I can't sit here and tell you, you know, I can't wait to play this song again. And I can't wait to play this song again. I mean, like, I don't really know what to say to that. You know, like,
right.
It's fun. It's number one, it's 7 months away. Right. it's 6-7 months away. And I'll tell you this, and this is true with Alice, and it'll probably be true with me. And it was true for those shows in LA. Set lists are usually made up about 20 minutes before the gig. You know what I mean? So like you start a tour and you kind of get familiar with, you know, 40-ish tunes, you know what I mean? And then, you know, you kind of have sound checks and stuff to work them out. And also, you know, maybe things feel different for different venues. Maybe, you know, maybe you're playing a bill. Maybe you're playing a bill where you're thinking maybe it needs more of an upbeat kind of aggressive thing. Or maybe you're playing the Montreux Jazz Festival, and you're definitely not going to do a rock set there. You know, you're gonna peel it back and do the more songwritery acoustic type stuff. You know, like it depends on the venue, depends on the crowd. And also how we're feeling, you know. And hey, this one wasn't sounding that good. Let's not play this tonight. Let's work on that for a couple of days before we put it back in. It's very fluid, I guess, is what I'm saying. You know.
All good. Let's wrap up on the album. When you listen to this album, start to finish, all the way through, what do you take from it as a complete work?
It feels to me, I mean, it feels to me like a record. You know, I don't know why that's such a weird thing to say, but it kind of is. You know, like people are, I guess people are more interested in songs, I guess, just like, you know, I've always been interested in albums, you know, instead of a chapter out of a book or a blurb, you know, I like reading the whole novel, you know what I mean? And even though you might not sit down with some sort of a road plan, you know, where, you know, this means this, and this is connects to this, and it's the whole thing has some sort of a theme. It doesn't have to be that, but a body of work, a collection of songs that work together, you know, good albums are just albums in general are time capsules of a particular period of time in a very small group of individuals, that are lived, rocked, recorded, and then it's that way forever. You know what I mean? And then it's left. It's given to the world and left to fend for itself. You know, see, you know, whether it scrapes along or whether it completely flourishes and goes all over the place. You know, I've had the experience of both, and the one constant is, and I guess it's the reason that I continue to do it, is I remember I remember how I felt listening to albums and listening to the radio, and how that made me feel, and wanting to create things that, and music and albums and songs that made other people feel the way I felt then. And been able to achieve that. Still amazed that I still get to do it. And I feel like I'm still doing it at the top and best level that I can on this record, you know.
That's a freaking great wrap up. So anything you want to add I didn't ask you about?
No, it sounds good, man.
Yeah, no, again, I really love the record. It's a great, and I was telling Elliot, I actually listened to it start to finish all the way through twice this morning. That says a lot. I don't do that with many records.
It's a good listen, man. You know, it's got some energy to it, and I love listening to it driving in my car. You know, I think it's a good road trip kind of summery kind of feel album, you know. Maybe a few summer storms rolling through there, but I don't mean it in a light way. I just mean I think there's a lot of space, and I think that this record is seeking space, you know.
Yeah, well, I was going to say but not only is it a good energy record, but I also love the fact that it has the variety and it has the versatility. So it takes you on that journey up and down. It's not simply a, you know, look, man, it's funny. I was just talking about this with Joe Perry not long ago, right? AC/DC, you're going one fucking speed the whole time. You know, there is no up, down. Yep. There is just, you're going straight on that highway to hell. And, you know, sometimes it's nice to take the, you know, Ventura Highway.
Well, I hear you. I hear you. But I have a little bit of a bone to pick with that, because it's very subtle. It's very subtle, but you have to listen. There are different speeds to AC/DC, and they're one of my favorite bands of all time. I get what you're saying. You know, some artists and some sounds, there's a little bit more variety, but there's also a beauty to fucking just staying fucking in the groove, man. And there's something so powerful about that. I was just listening to, I think it was Highway to Hell on the radio the other day, and it's just like, fucking listen to that, man. You know what I mean? It's still fucking badass, you know? It's just like there will never be anything like that ever again. You know what I mean? Like, and there doesn't have to be, because there already was at AC/DC, you know?
I love them. I just interviewed this album, and it's funny because Joe was saying the same thing, and Joe was like, they're one of my top three bands of all time. But they kind of represent that idea. Again, you know, you might hear it a little more sudden, but just to clarify, no, I fucking love AC/DC, one of my favorite bands of all time. But when I'm putting them on driving, I feel like it's taking you on one journey versus a record that, you know, kind of has a little more ebb and flow, is what I was saying.
Fair enough. I'll accept that. I'll accept that. I agree with you there.
Cool, dude. Always a pleasure. Congratulations on the record, and we'll see you in March.
Hey, thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it.
Hey, this is Steve Balton. You've been listening to My Turning Point with special guest Jerry Cantrell.
When it comes to LASIK, Dr. Boutros and the Eye Center have led the way for the past 25 years. Today, this tradition continues by being one of the few practices in the country to offer you iDesign 2.0, using the same technology as the NASA James Webb Telescope. And in the hands of an elite surgeon like Dr. Boutros, more patients are seeing 20/20 or better after LASIK. Right now, enjoy 20% off eye LASIK with iDesign. Go to theeyecenter.com or call 888-844-2020. Some restrictions apply.
Introducing Under Armour's Infinity High Sports Bra. Its ergonomic design is molded to support the natural movement of your body. With cord-out padding, the better breathability eliminates extra bulk without sacrificing support. And quick-dry padding is Under Armour's fastest-drying padding yet. When you're lifting heavy, running fast, and pushing yourself further than ever before, you need a bra that will help you go that extra mile and make you feel your best. Shop the Infinity High Sports Bra now at UA.com.